Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Bye, 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 baby. I am bye, baby. I am brown baby, I am brown baby, I am brown baby, I am.
Hey there, my name is Nikesh Shukla. Welcome to Season 1, Episode 4 of the Brown Baby Podcast, a parenting podcast where I ask the question, how do we raise our kids to be joyful and realistic when the world is so bleak and I'm so angry and sad? Each week I have writers and artists and chefs and musicians and the such to come on and talk about their parenting journeys, the highs and the lows, and the joys and the realisms of being a parent. It's an honest and open conversation with some of my favourite people. This week is a special episode because this is the second episode I'm dropping this week. It's publication week for the book Brown Baby, and I thought I would celebrate with 2 episodes for you. Previously, earlier in the week, we had Nadia Hussain, but this week is now a chance for you to hear my chat with my dear friend Himesh Patel. But first, please buy the book. Please buy Brown Baby, a memoir of race, family and home. It's out now. It's about my parenting journey and conversations I've had with my daughters about racism, the patriarchy, climate change, mental health, all the stuff that keeps me up at night. It's had a heap of great reviews already and amazing quotes from Nadia Hussain, Bernardine Evaristo, Deborah Francis White, Max Porter, loads of really amazing people. We're in lockdown, so it's hard to get the word out. So if you're a fan of the podcast, please buy the book from wherever you get your books. Anywhere, please just do buy it. There is a link to my bookshop.org affiliate shopfront thing in the show notes. Bookshop.org is amazing because 10% of any sale comes to the affiliate, in which case me, and I donate all of my affiliate money to charity. And 10% of the sale goes to a pool that independent bookshops in the UK can access, which in times of COVID is essential. So I won't do the hard sell. All I'll say is this podcast is free. I'd love to keep it free. Book sales keep the wolves from the door, and my kids are scared of wolves. Okay, so to Himesh Patel. Himesh is an actor and a writer. He contributed an essay to the book I edited, The Good Immigrant. Also, he is an amazing actor who started out in EastEnders and has gone on to amazing films like Yesterday, a show like The Luminaries, and a little film that you may have seen last year called Tenet. He is an amazing actor and an amazing person. And also, not many of you will know, but Himesh and his partner had a baby during lockdown. He read an early copy of Brown Baby, and a lot of what he was thinking about really resonated with him. He even read the audiobook of Brown Baby, which is really lovely. So we decided to get together very early on, I must say, into his life as a father to talk about those early days of parenthood. It's a nice, intimate and very personal chat between two friends. I imagine as his kid grows, we'll pick up more conversations down the road in future seasons because there's just so much ground to cover and Himesh is only right at the start. So please listen to Himesh Patel on the Brown Baby podcast. Welcome to the podcast, Himesh Patel. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I am frazzled, man, if I'm being
frazzled.
Honest. Frazzled, yeah. I feel like this stage of lockdown is just a lot of plate spinning and it's a lot of different energy. So it's like, because there's no like outdoors time because it's so fucking cold and rainy in Bristol where we are, I just feel like I'm jumping from Zoom to trying to get some pages down to doing the homeschool thing to like stopping my kids from fighting with each other through to trying to move around because I'm just a sloth at the moment. And I get to the end of every single day and I've got this joke with some friends at the moment where, like, 4 p.m. in our WhatsApp group, I would just type stairs at drinks cabinet. And that's how I feel most days. How about you? How are things?
Things are okay. It's a bit crazy. I've had a crazy kind of start, end to the last year and beginning of this year in terms of the work. Everything happened at once, which is great because I feel very privileged to be working. But on Boxing Day, I went to Boston to shoot my part in the Netflix film Don't Look Up, which was super exciting, but I had to get there and just quarantine for eight or 10 days, something like that. And so that was really surreal, kind of being away from my family and just being in this hotel room for that. And then, like, it was the weirdest New Year's ever. Just sat on my own watching Rick and Morty. And then I did that, and then I came home for about 5 days, and then me, myself, my partner and our baby, we moved here where we are now, to Toronto, because I'm shooting Station 11, the HBO series, which we started a year ago, before there was any pandemic on the horizon. And now we're continuing our series, which is about the survivors of a pandemic. So it's all a bit weird, really. And we're just coming to the very last day of quarantine. So we've been in quarantine for 2 weeks.
What a mad, mad life. So, I mean, I don't want to do the whole, you know, we're on a parenting podcast talking about parenting. You're a very new parent at the moment. We've both spent the large part of the previous lockdown talking about fatherhood. And now you are a father and you've got this beautiful, amazing, lovely, precious little thing. How has your feelings around fatherhood changed? I'm just throwing you straight into the deep end here, Mesh. I haven't even, like, teed up the thing. I'm just like, let's just go straight into the deep questions because, you know, we're friends. And so this is just like, this is what we would probably talk about rather than it feel like a manufactured interview. Yeah. How are you finding fatherhood?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's a challenge, of course. It's, you know, it's completely new. There's nothing you can really compare it to. And what's interesting is, you know, in the build up to it, there are some people who've had children. Thankfully, not you, but there are some people who are a bit like, oh, you know, well, get ready. Your life's over. You know, it's gonna be crazy. You know, all this sort of stuff, and you realize that none of that really. If you put that front and center, maybe, you know, if you let the fear take hold, maybe you'd kind of be overwhelmed by it. And of course, I have moments of being really overwhelmed by it. But at the end of the day, there's just an instinct that just kind of takes hold and you just kind of get on with it. Because what's the alternative? You know, like, the alternative is not doing that. And like, personally, I can't really imagine not being the very best I can be. Giving it my best shot. So it's great. You know, it's kind of what we signed up for and so much more.
It's a weird feeling because I think there's an element of being British that means the longer you are a parent, the more you have to do that thing where you think it's the worst. You act like it's such a strain on your life and your time. You're like... Someone's like, oh, how are your beautiful kids? And you're like, oh, they're such cunts at the moment. Like, when you actually, like, because actually the real answer, the more sincere answer, it just feels so much more precious, like something that I don't really want to share. Yes, it is hard. And yes, it is tedious and dreary and drudgerous and all the rest of it. But it's also hilarious. And it's also something that is tender and vulnerable and lovely and beautiful. And it's all of those things, and yet the thing that I default to is, oh yeah, such hard work. I wish I didn't undermine it all the time.
Yeah.
You've got all of this to look forward to, basically, because this is like a very new thing for you.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that ultimately it'll start to wear me down, and all I'll see is the drudgery.
Yeah, pretty much.
Great. Well, I can't wait.
Yeah, you know, it'll be, you know, the best best time of your life. The, you know, the first line of the book of Brown Baby, I'm basically undercutting the whole thing by basically going, never thought about being a parent, but then I got drunk at Christmas. As yeah. a way of kind of talking about how sometimes these things that you don't plan for, they just sort of happen. You take them on as a mantle, or you just take them on because that's the thing that you're doing, and you don't necessarily have a plan, and you don't necessarily think it's your spiritual calling, but it's just the thing that you're doing, and there's nothing grander that I can say about it other than that. And I fear I'm just sort of doing my daughters a disservice by kind of normalizing.
For us, our journey was that we had planned it, and we, you know, it was something that we'd been meaning to do. But then it's just, unless you do all the research in the world, which I don't know who really has time for that, there's always going to be something that surprises you. And every journey is different. So your personal journeys are going to throw up stuff that no one can prepare you for. And that is something that you have to traverse, you know, together, if you're fortunate enough to be in a partnership, or, you know, on your own, if that's your situation. But it's such a completely unique journey for everyone, and that's when you realize how incredible it is, because you go, well, I don't know how many babies are born every minute, but
I believe there's one born every minute.
Famously, yes, there's one. That every single one of those babies is a completely unique journey unto themselves, but also for their parents. And that's such a wild thought.
Yeah. So it's interesting that you're saying that this was a planned thing for you both. Tell me about wanting kids, because it's something that sort of just feels quite alien to me in a weird way, even though I have two kids. I never desired to like have a baby. I never felt like that was the thing that was missing, and I'm quite intrigued by it feeling like something that you really wanted to do.
It kind of just appeared as a conversation I was having with my partner. Obviously the female perspective on this kind of comes into light when we consider the biological aspect of it, and obviously the body clock that's ticking there. And I think at the time I was a bit, I was always kind of like, it's something that I wanted to do. I think I have maybe had that instinct to want to be a dad or want to have that responsibility. But it was something that I wasn't sure when it would happen. And I perhaps, this is something that I think I'm guilty of generally, but it's kind of going, this has to happen first before that can then happen. And so in my head, I'd kind of been like, you know, oh, I need to do X, Y, Z. I need to be, you know, in a certain place, career-wise maybe, or financially, or whatever these considerations that we have to make, obviously, when we're thinking about having kids. But that I was like, well, I can't have this conversation now. We can't really seriously start talking about this now, can we? Because X, Y, Z hasn't fallen into place. But then I ended up having a conversation. I was in New Zealand shooting The Luminaries. This wonderful friend of mine now, Paulie, his name is, he was driving me from my place to the set, and he was also a runner on, and we hung out a lot. He's a great guy. And he had his kids quite young. And he was like, you know, man, it's just, you never have enough money. It's never the right time. You never know what you're doing. And you'll also never regret it. Like it was so refreshingly, even though at that time, I guess I hadn't really had any of the dozens of people who said your life is over, but there is still that narrative. That narrative is quite a popular one, isn't it? Really, it's something that we've all heard at some point in our lives, that idea of like, oh, wait till you have kids, because otherwise you know, your life is not your own anymore. And though that is true to a certain extent, the way that Paulie was talking about it, he was like, yeah, things are different, but you've just got a little human being with you for stuff that you want to do. Yeah, there are considerations to make, you know, we're not going to be going out getting drunk at, you know, whatever time of night, but there's a line in the sand, you know, that gets drawn, and then you just go with it. And I think that was the thing, is I kind of went, oh yeah, you kind of just have to go, all right, fine. There's a level of privilege to that as well. You know, I did find myself in a situation where I was like, I'm financially able to bear the, you know, the responsibility of a child, and you know, and personally in a good position for it. So there is that consideration. But emotionally, it just kind of, I kind of went, yeah, sure, all right, let's do it. Let's take this leap of faith. You know, it's such a leap. You just kind of go, I don't know what I'm diving into here, but let's go for it.
I think it took me a long time to realize that, yes, certain aspects of my life were over, but because I had a long period of mourning those aspects of my life that were over, I didn't realize that it was past time for them to be over. It was...
Right.
So the thing, certainly for me, if I had carried on the way things were, living my life the way things were, the way I was, I don't think I would have been happy. I also don't think I would have done projects like The Good Immigrant. I don't think I would have gone back into youth work. I don't think I would have spent lots of time like thinking about the future and like, what skills do I possess that I can pass on to people in a useful manner, and all the things that have kind of really dictated my life over the last 6-7 years. For the longest time, I thought I was grieving youth, or this sort of abstract ideal of youth. Maybe this now meant I was old, I was middle-aged. And actually, none of that matters, because I don't know if you felt this, but I really remember a very specific feeling in the first few weeks that my child was alive, where... even though I was, 34 at the time, I was walking around with my kid, trying to get her to sleep, trying to settle her, and I just kept thinking, this isn't right. I am not old enough to be doing this. I am not responsible. Dad is going to come, he's going to knock on the door, he's going to just quietly take the kid and just say, Nikesh, go and order us a pizza and put the TV on. I will take care of this. Because I just don't feel responsible enough. I don't feel old enough. I just felt so out of my... I suddenly felt like a little child again. I felt like I felt like a teenager again. And it really tripped me out that that's what I was going through in those early days. Mm. Just the sudden, like, you're not responsible for this. Maybe it was just my brain's way of going, look, you are in a different stage of your life. That's okay. Whether you're old or not is irrelevant, because it's kind of to do with how you feel. And actually, you are responsible. You're an adult. You're a fucking adult. What's wrong with you? Mm. You pay your council tax every month. You are an adult.
Yeah. I'm still going through some of that. You know, I'm definitely going through, and I think this is something that I've dealt with just generally in my life, is that feeling of going, I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not capable of doing this, and I'm failing. And that, it's a really unhealthy narrative, but it definitely has its time when it takes hold. And it's something that I'm generally, you know, working on, trying to, you know, not have that narrative be as prevalent as it has been. But in a way, something like this, I'm glad I'm aware of those narratives, and that they are just that, it's not the truth. And so, you know, because when I think about bringing up my daughter, I want her to be aware that we're not perfect as parents. You know, we didn't always know what we were doing. In fact, maybe we never will really know what we're doing, and that we are just kind of making it up as we go, but that we are also doing our due diligence in terms of, you know, reading books that are recommended, but also taking care of our own mental health. And so I think there's definitely a journey I'm going on there with that, you know, which is a sort of a personal thing, but that will have a direct effect on the way I bring up my daughter. But also, yeah, I think for me personally, I've been a bit old beyond my years for quite a while. What I've had there is that I've been old beyond my years, but then there's also been part of me that's gone, so you need to do all the stuff that you didn't get to do. You know, because I didn't really have a particularly raucous teenage years or a particularly loud 20s, to be honest. So there's definitely some part of me that's like, but what about all that? You know, but I think doing something like this kind of makes you go, this is it. And you have to trust that you made this choice because that's what you actually wanted, and that you don't actually want to be doing any of that other stuff that I don't even know what it is, but this idea of youth that we're kind of told exists, and within that narrative of youth there isn't a child, you don't have a responsibility. Whereas I think maybe there is a space in which I can still be youthful in some way, but I can also be a dad. And that there's a world in which those two things can exist. And maybe that means, that maybe that's a positive thing. Still being responsible, still being aware that I'm the adult in the situation and that I have a responsibility towards this person, but that I can still be youthful and energetic and have that for them as well.
I definitely feel like I come from a generation of the infallible parent, like me and all of my cousins. And maybe it's something to do with what it is to be from an immigrant background on precarious land where so much value is placed on success as a marker of like our, you know, right to be on the land, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, which, you know, I don't necessarily think that's right. But like, my parents were infallible. What they said went, and whenever my dad had to have an opinion about what was going on in our lives, that meant that the word is final, because most of it was left up to my mum. And I think about the stuff, the way that my parents raised me, and all of the stuff that I'd like to take forward, and all of the stuff that I'd like to do an alternate version of. And I really feel like as my kids are pushing against the world, discovering what the world is, finding their moral compass, finding out what's right and wrong, the worst thing I can be is an infallible parent, because I know what a dickhead I am. I know, like, I know how many questionable decisions I make a day, an hour.
Yeah.
The worst thing in the world would be for me to kind of act to my kids like my decisions are inscrutable.
Yeah.
At the same time, because what I present myself as very fallible in front of my kids, it does give them every opportunity to question my decisions.
Gives them like bundles of ammunition.
Yeah, yeah. So like, if I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry, I was a bit like that. I'm just a bit tired today. Then later on, if I get angry with them for something that they've genuinely done that needs to be called upon, they're like, are you sure it's not because you're being tired today? And you're like, I hoist by my own petard.
Yeah, yeah. That's so interesting. God, I never thought about that. Because I've always kind of had this idea that, you know, I can't wait to get to the point where I'm just talking to my child as an adult, you know, where we're just kind of on a level. And that, yeah, I want to be able to show that, you know, I get things wrong as well. And but it's so much harder than you kind of have these ideas in your head of like, well, this is how it's going to happen, and it's going to be great, we're going to be so open with each other. And that is still true. I mean, so what are you finding, that your kids are starting to get wise to it, so they're starting to like use it against you?
I'm starting to understand why kids need boundaries and parameters,
right?
And it's about giving them boundaries rather than putting myself on the other side of a fence, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So like yesterday, my youngest child, my oldest child is currently really enjoying goading my youngest child.
Right.
So she'll just take the piss out of her until she reacts. And the youngest child reacts as the youngest child always does react. Like they feel like they're really being picked upon. And and I pulled my oldest child up on it yesterday, and she was like, her reaction was, it was fun, I found it funny. And I was like, yeah, but your sister did not find it funny. And she was like, yeah, but I found it funny. I was like, yeah, but the thing that you have to do is understand that sometimes the things that you say or do that you find funny, other people don't. And if it's upsetting them, then maybe instead of haranguing them that it's funny, you should try and understand why they don't find it funny. And I realized in that moment that I was like, fuck, this is the conversation I wish I could have with like all of the right wing comedians who are like, oh, rape joke's a joke. It's funny, it's funny.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But I'm able to communicate this to a 6-year-old. Why can't I communicate this to a 40-year-old white dude who is a millionaire? But that's an aside. My daughter wasn't quite getting it. So I was like, have there ever been times where I have done something or said something to you and you've not liked it and you've told me that you don't like it? And my daughter was like, yeah, every time you do a loud fart, you always blame me and I don't like it. And I was like, yeah, and what do? I always say I'm sorry. And then I realized in that moment, oh my God, this is how my daughter is like framing her moral compass around examples of like me going, you farted.
That's the harrowing flashback in her biopic.
Yeah, that's gonna come up in therapy for like 20 years time. She's gonna be like, Yeah, like I just feel this real sense of worthlessness because my father used to walk into a room, do a loud fart, blame me and walk out. I just don't feel like I'm in control. Like, imagine that was... I mean, if that is what she's bringing up in therapy, I feel like I would have done a good job, probably. I wanted to
seemingly
go back.
Harmless, yeah.
Seemingly harmless, yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I wanted to go back to something you said earlier. I'm kind of fascinated by this, the fact that this is something that you've been really open to, possibly because you've been, I know you say, unwise before my time, or unwise beyond my years, but actually I just think it's like there's a level of maturity to you that I guess comes from the fact that you were, you know, a teenager in the adult space very quickly, you know. You're also someone who spent loads of time by themselves as a child and all the rest of it. Like, is the construction of family and all the rest of it, is that sort of construction of stability something that you've just always felt, this is something that I want to do because I've kind of had quite an unorthodox upbringing and, you know, did, like, you were in EastEnders from the age of, what, 16?
Yeah, I think that might be true. Yeah, I think it's certainly some semblance of creating something that you're proud of, that you can continue to have a hand in shaping. That's probably got a lot to do with it. It was, yeah, obviously a very unorthodox life, just generally. And I wonder whether, obviously, part of that is being the child of immigrants and being part of that. As you grow older, especially, you realize how, obviously, growing up, that's just your normal. But then you grow into an adult, and especially for me, because I didn't have that much experience of other arenas growing up. I didn't have much of a social life as a teenager. It wasn't deeply unhealthy, but it wasn't particularly busy, and so it remained normal to me for quite a long time. Probably until I moved to London at the age of 21, to be honest with you. That was only when I started to realise the gulf in experience, in lived experience, between me and so many other people.
It's something you describe really beautifully in your essay in The Good Immigrant, where you talk about this sort of sense of alienation that you had growing up in, you know, quite a rural village in Cambridgeshire, and being on the fringes of a South Asian community that you'd see very, very occasionally. But for the most part, your everyday life until you started in EastEnders was, you know, being the only Asian family in the village and spending a lot of time feeling quite othered because people don't really, you didn't fit into any easily identifiable box. And you were also sort of forging your own identity for yourself. And I think the thing that you really, really nail in your essay in The Good Immigrant was this feeling that you move to London, you suddenly meet lots of people who kind of look like you, they sort of fit into community that you feel like you're a part of, but you also feel like you're a little bit behind everyone else because they've already had all this, they've already grown up with all this stuff, and you feel slightly on the outside of that. And I thought that was a really, really beautiful but sort of sad thing that you described in that essay.
You kind of struggle to draw parallels between yourself and others. I mean, I think so much of connection is about going, you know, oh, same. And there weren't many people I could do that with. There weren't many people who were going to be like, oh, you grew up in a village in Cambridgeshire as well. You're the only Asian family in the village as well. Oh, cool. And then you were on EastEnders at the age of 16 too. Great. Oh, there aren't that many people you're going to. And then it's like, oh, you stayed at home and did the paper round until you were 21. Me too. Like, there's not you're not going to get that much. And also then I moved to London, and in terms of people my own age, most of them hadn't had the privilege of being on a TV show at the age of 16 and therefore not having to go to university, or, you know, if they'd chosen to do that. But I think perhaps there are aspects of things that I missed out on by not going down that road that maybe would have opened me up to worlds. You know, I know from the experience of my sister, for example, you know, having grown up in the same context as me, when she went to university, things, you know, she obviously worlds opened up to her and changed her life. And though I had that obviously through doing what I was doing, I was kind of in one place. You know, when you're on a show like EastEnders, you're in one place. You're not able to go and do that job over there and this job over here. And then when I did eventually do this job over here, it turned out to be our short film, Two Doses, and it did open up a whole world for me and led to everything. But I didn't have a lot of that growing up. You're looking for it somewhere. But at the same time, what I'm very proud of is, and I think it was instilled in me from my parents, was a sense of always being true to yourself and your values, and not ever reneging on your values just to fit in. And I think that's something that I've always had. And though part of it was probably fear of judgment and the sort of the shame and the stuff that we tend to grow up with as children of immigrants, I think part of it was also just going, and I don't want to do that just to fit in, you know. And I think that's probably what led me to being a bit kind of old beyond my years. I don't know how wise beyond my years I was, but I was definitely old beyond my years, in the sense of kind of going, I don't really know what's going on here, but, you know, and I'll have my fun when I feel like it, but I'm not going to do something just because everyone my age tells me it's the right thing to do. And maybe that's what led me to feeling I was ready to be a dad at what is a relatively early age.
Or not an early age, you know, depending on perspective. Like, I think that whole thing is so mixed around. Like, you know, my parents didn't have me until I was 30. My parents didn't have me.
Wow. They didn't have you until you were 30. That's,
I know, there's some strange Morgan Mindy vibes going on there. No, my dad was 30 when, and my mum was 29 when I was born, and that was seen as quite late. And every now and then I'll get a snapshot of, like, they really enjoyed their 20s. Like, they really made sure they enjoyed their 20s.
Yeah.
And then when I came about, that was just the stage of the life that they were in, and then things changed. But in terms of how the rest of the family felt, like, they had me very late, which weird, because, you know, the way you're describing it now, like, you had your kid, like, when my dad had me,
right,
at like the similar stage in your life, and that sort of transition period that we're kind of talking about, there's like this sort of cosmic thing that I don't really know how to articulate, so I'm going to move on from it before I say anything way too wanky. put it out into the ether. So, you're an actor. What's that like? Quick segue.
Sorry, no. So you're saying cosmic thing. Go on.
No, I don't quite know what I'm trying to articulate. I think it's basically like, I don't think it's a particularly early age to have a kid.
Yeah. I think, I mean, yeah, and I wonder, you know, I don't know what the stats are, I suppose, but maybe it's an idea I've been fed by the media or whatever, just the idea of men having their children later on a personal level, especially once you just make the choice. If you're lucky enough to be able to make the choice, then you kind of just go, okay, this is it. We're going to make this choice, and we're going to try and have a kid. And then especially when, you know, if you're fortunate enough to then get pregnant, then you're like, right. It's like I don't know how you found it, but it's like stages of acceptance. You kind of go, okay, we're trying, great. And then well, we're pregnant, great. And then that just builds for 9 months until eventually this human being appears, you know.
Well, at some point during those 9 months, your partner's like, stop saying we're pregnant, you're not pregnant.
Yeah,
and you're like,
sure, we have those.
We're sorry. You're right.
We're sorry if you feel that you're pregnant. Yeah, so it's such a crazy journey, kind of going. One of my best friends, he oddly, his son was born almost exactly a year before my daughter, and so I've got this kind of telegraph ahead of me of like what's coming, you know. But he was like, it really only hit home when he was holding his son in his arms, you know. It was like, oh, this is it, like, here we go. Even though you knew it was coming, it wasn't like a complete shock, obviously, but there's something that doesn't unlock until they arrive.
Yeah, I guess definitely for the father, it becomes real in that moment. Like, it, you know, it's definitely, you know, obviously the first chapter of this book is sort of describing that moment where,
yeah,
I was like, you know, upstairs in what is now their bedroom, just staring out the window with this kid in my arms, and I was just looking out of the window that I looked out of every single fucking day of my life, and yeah, everything in the world was happening exactly as it should be. Everything was ordinary, nothing was out of place except me, and and it was just so, this sort of mad cosmic thing. There's just mad feeling that like the world keeps on turning, and you know, we're the ones that change, but the world will keep turning. And I guess I'd not really considered that about time before. And to kind of go back to the thing that you said earlier, like about thinking about how we kind of take care of ourselves when we're trying to take care of our kids, like a really amazing thing that a friend said to me once was, when airplanes lose cabin pressure and the oxygen masks fall down, they tell you to fix your own oxygen mask on before helping people around you. And I certainly felt like for the longest time I was so destabilized by the early months of having a baby, that I kept forgetting to put my own oxygen mask on. And when people tell you it changes so quickly, I always thought, when people said it, just everything changes so quickly, like constantly changing. And at the time, because I had my oxygen mask on, I constantly thought, fuck you.
I did it.
Fuck you. Like, this is not helpful. And actually, like, years later, I can look back on it and go, actually, that was probably the most helpful thing that anyone said to me, was that everything changes so fast. And the moment you adjust to a new state of things, they go through a new developmental stage, and like, suddenly you're back in sleep progression just when you thought you'd nailed it, or like, they change up their behavior, and then you're like, oh my god, I don't understand. And it like messes with your brain, and you're sleep deprived, and you're not thinking through things rationally. And so actually the worst thing that someone can say to you in the moment is, everything changes so fast, just be in the moment of the thing that is happening right now, otherwise you will forget it because you're worrying about getting to the next stage. And this is a very roundabout way of saying, I saw a video, I was just sort of scrolling back, and I watched a video of my first kid from like 6 years ago, that I'm in, just lying next to her, and she's like staring into space, and I'm like looking at her, and I do not recognize myself in that moment. I look at the shirt that I'm wearing, and I'm like, yeah, I got rid of that because, you know, fatherhood puts the pounds on, and I can no longer fit. And I can see in my eyes that I'm looking at her with utter love and adoration and all the rest of it, but I do not recognize that moment as something that's happened to me. And that's something that really eats me up inside, that I wasn't present enough in that moment to preserve it.
But would you not say that the very act of being present means that you're not necessarily recording it for later use? Do you know what I mean? Like, that's why it was recorded on video, but you're never really going to, because the whole thing of being present is, there is no... I'm not necessarily going to be able to lock this moment away and recall it.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think what I was feeling in watching it back was, I don't remember this happening.
Yeah.
And watching it I feel on the outside of it. I don't watch it. And, you know, like every now and then you can look at a photograph or a video and you can put yourself back into that moment and go, oh yeah, I remember that when that happened.
Right, yeah.
It's just in those early moments, because like everything was so manic and chaotic and crazy, mm-hmm. I just felt on the outside of the moment, and that kind of, that made me sad. But isn't that just the trick of memory? Like,
what I will never forget is the night that my partner went into labour and it all happened. And then in the morning, our daughter arrived. And the day before felt like months ago. Like that line in the sand, I've never felt anything like it before. And I don't think it was just the fact that I'd been up all night, but there was just such a clear divide in time. And that felt like months ago. Everything that came before just felt like a whole other lifetime. And in a way it is, I suppose. But then, yeah, there are moments then like that. It all feels quite close by now. Especially because of everything that I talked about at the beginning, like the manic kind of time that I've had and that we've kind of been going through. But there will come a time, yeah, when I look back on it and I won't recognise it.
I guess, interestingly, you had those weeks of isolation to kind of reflect on those things that had come before, and you've got stuff to tangibly hold on to.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting sort of aspect of the whole thing, being in quarantine, well, going through everything during this mad year that we've all had.
Just to kind of close up, I wanted to ask you about the future, because I mean, obviously you're a very new parent, so, you know,
yeah,
we should definitely have another chat later on down the line about all of this stuff. But so much of what I am concerned with at the moment, in the way that we think about raising our kids, is the world seems so fucked, and everything seems bleak. And you know, you and I are recording this on a day where the death toll from the COVID-19 pandemic has hit like such an unimaginable number for such a small country that everything feels really heavy. And yet we have these precious, beautiful, brilliant blank slates who we want to raise with joy and boundlessness and ambition but also prepare them for the world, because I don't want to lie to them about what the world is like.
No.
So I know this is very, very early days for you, but how are you thinking that you will talk to your kid about what the world is? How will you prepare her for what lies ahead?
Yeah, it's a really important question, and it's something that I'm still considering day to day as things unfold in the world. And I suppose perhaps it's been something that I've kind of maybe been considering for longer than usual, because of everything we've been going through. You know, we've been going through this pandemic, and I never thought it would be over by the time she arrived. So I was like, okay, is that going to be okay? Like, are we going to, is it going to go on long enough that she'll remember it? Hopefully not. And what things are going to be normal to her existence that wouldn't have been before all of this happened? And how will we talk to her about how crazy the world was when she came into it, and everything that happened while she was in the womb, and down to coronavirus, of course, but George Floyd and that history, and the guy who was president when she was born, which breaks my heart to say that's the case, but at least now he's not president, and what do we, but then there's still this guy as prime minister. And in a way you kind of go, well, I maybe that's a starting point. It's just going, this is what the world was like when you came into it, and this is, and I can only, you know, continue reading on, you know, why the world is the way it is. And like you say in your book, there has to be hope, because the alternative isn't worth thinking about. You have to lead with hope. I don't think there can be, there are always going to be times where it seems bleak. And yes, the structures within which we exist often only seem to reinforce the idea that we're fighting a losing battle because of XYZ, but within, at least within the four walls of your own home, you kind of have to be like, there's hope. Within our family, amongst our friends, there's hope. And we kind of have to try and bring that into the world. But also you don't want to put pressure on them to be that beacon of hope, you know? You don't want to kind of be like, it's your turn now, like, I don't know what we guys did, but you guys have got to fix it, because that's not particularly healthy either, I don't think. But all you can do is lead by example, I suppose. So that's when it comes back to, who do I want to be? As a person, as a father, how do I lead by example and do that?
Yeah, it's funny to have this conversation with you as you are about to make a TV miniseries, limited series, sorry, about how humanity rebuilds itself in the aftermath of a global pandemic. And you know, not to spoil Station 11, the book by Emily St. John Mandel, for people who haven't read it yet, and obviously read it and watch the show, but what it comes down to, I think that the point that she gets to in this sort of really wonderful, humane book about what it is to exist, is sometimes it's about the power of stories that keep us going and give us empathy and give us hope, and also take us to places we dare not dream of, but also show us reflections of who we could be. And I think that's all we can strive for sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
We should say something really, really funny so we don't end on such a downer before the end of the podcast.
Hey, so cosmic vibrations. We want to talk about cosmic vibrations.
Yeah, I've been turning into a hippie in lockdown 3, smoking weed and playing PlayStation 4 games. before we go, what is the best advice that you've received as a parent, and what is the most useless advice you've received as a parent?
The best advice someone said, the best advice I'll give you is don't listen to anyone's advice.
Yeah, it's a very, very good bit of advice.
Which was great. Which is great in the fact that, A, it gives you the idea of going, I'm not going to listen to anyone's advice, or at least I'm not going to make any of it rules that I have to live by. I'll take the idea of it, that's fine. But also the fact that it stops you from being the person who does that, is now that we're parents, we don't want to be doing that, because oddly, it has to be said, I don't know if this is the same for everyone, we know about 6 other people who are having babies now, strangely. It could be a pandemic thing, I don't know.
But people got very bored during lockdown.
Yeah.
They decided to, maybe they couldn't leave the house to buy condoms, I don't know.
Anyway,
but isn't it a thing at times of uncertainty, the thing that you do is like an act of certainty. People have had kids before. Kids act as tethers, and they there's something really grounding about them that kind of make everything that you're doing and being real. So like, I can understand why, you know, that isn't that the whole thing about the boomer generation, like those baby boomers came in the aftermath of war and recession and stuff, and people had kids as a way of like coping with certain things. I'm maybe making this up.
No, yeah, I can see the logic in it. It'd be interesting to see the data, I suppose, when it all kind of, you know, within the first year of this all. But it does kind of mean that we don't, that bit of advice of not listening to anyone's advice kind of means that we also then don't want to be the kind of people who go, oh, you've got to get this thing and this is the way to do it, and you got to do this, you got to do that, which you do get quite a lot of from people. And as I said earlier, it's such a unique thing. All you can do is, if asked, to be honest, you can kind of talk about your own experience, but there are no certainties and there's no one way. I think the worst bit of advice I got from someone was to make sure that I get that I build a man cave. Which is a concept that I really struggle with. A man cave, like, why is everything within this space exclusively a male thing?
It's rubbish.
You know, I don't know. It's an odd concept, but then for that to also be a bit of advice in the face of impending fatherhood, I found very confusing.
Himesh Patel, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to you for listening. Thank you to Bluebird, to my publishers, and to Acast, and to Himesh. Please buy the book. Remember to like and subscribe and rate the podcast. Tell your friends. Text your friends. I've been wanting to say this for months, but Brown Baby, my memoir, is now out. I hope you buy it. See you next week, where we'll be back with Kit DeWall. Thank you. Goodbye.
Brown baby, I am brown baby. Yes, I am. I am. Silly brown
baby. Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.